You're listening to episode 5 of season 6 of the GNU World Order. Hi everyone, my name is Klaatu, and this is the GNU World Order. It's my little show about geeky stuff, primarily about, well, GNU and Linux. So today we're going to talk about some bash scripting, and some video editing, and some listener feedback. So let's get started. Okay, so last episode I kind of hinted that I wanted to talk about video editing and bash scripting and stuff like that, and the reason I'm talking about this is because I've felt for a while that, well, that first of all, Linux really, really needs a video editor. And I'm talking about a very specific kind of video editing application that professional editors could use, because that's kind of the world I live in. Both freelancing and now in my day job, I have to support video editors. So I mean, it's something that I'm very kind of aware of, and the lack of a good video editing application is really, really painfully obvious to me. So in a sense, I'm really not talking about a hobbyist kind of video editor. I'm not talking about a video editor that kind of is enough to get it done, and I'm not really talking about a video editor that requires 3 years of learning Linux in order to just begin to be able to configure it such that it will sort of play some of your media and more or less edit it together. And that's kind of the way that I feel about a lot of the editors in Linux right now. And as I've said before, I feel like the most promising one yet is Blender. But I don't get the sense that the development team of Blender necessarily has that prioritized. I've seen on the forums, on Blender forums, that people are with me on this. You know, people, or actually I'm with them, really, because their posts predate mine. But they are saying that, you know, hey, this is a great little video sequencing application. Could we get this feature? Could we get that feature? And it's not on the roadmap, I don't think. So, or it's very specific, you know, what is on the roadmap is very specific to what Blender is primarily used for, which is animation. So editing animated clips together and editing a whole bunch of source random footage from film shoot are completely different workflows. So very, very different. Therefore, I don't have any great faith that Blender is going to become the great video editing application that I dream it to be. I've tried, as I've said, like, what, a year ago now, to hire a developer, a local developer, to work on Blender and modify it for me specifically, I mean, as GPL code and stuff like that, but actually work on getting Blender to do, or at least maybe even, you know, as a fork or whatever, just kind of take the Blender stability and combine it with actual robust multimedia ability for video editing, very specifically for video editing, which would mean that, you know, you've got a good way to sync your audio and video and reliable ways of exporting it in the format that you want it to be in, and all the different things that you would want a video editor to do. That developer kind of dropped off the face of the earth, which is fine. He did so before I paid him any money, so I feel okay about it. But and that money has since kind of been spent on other things, unfortunately, although I'll probably start looking again maybe at some point just for kicks. So we'll see. Whatever happens. But the point being that Blender is not going to happen overnight. And Lightworks, of course, is the big, you know, supposedly God's gift to Linux video editing, even though Lightworks is, I think, not quite yet available for Windows. It's almost available for Windows. It doesn't do me a whole lot of good. And it's not out for Linux yet. It apparently won't be even supposedly ported until the end of 2011, at least officially, by whoever, I guess, claims ownership of the code or whatever. And then, so, my point, I guess, is that I sat down this past couple of weeks and started mapping out what a real video editor does, and what if I were going to go to someone and say, hey, you should start using Linux, or we should repurpose these boxes to be dedicated Linux editors, because that way we get to use the boxes and not pay for new ones. And yet, since they're no longer supported by Apple, we can convert them into Linux workstations, whatever. So I just kind of started thinking about that, and I mapped it all out and figured out the different modules, essentially, that you would need to have for a video editing application on GNU Linux. And I thought that once I had it all mapped out, I looked at it and I realized that really when you're talking about video editing, all you're talking about is hitting play on one device and hitting record on another. If you think about the way that, like if you've ever seen anyone doing home editing without any computer at all, you know, people used to like buy, like they would get like VCRs and they'd get like three of them or two of them even, and you'd have a blank tape in one and something that you could play in the other, and they'd hit play on VCR A, and then they'd hit record on VCR B, and they'd record 10 seconds of this anime movie.
Oi! No!
Kike! Iika, ima mita koto wo wasureru. And then they'd change tapes in VCR A to an old movie. And so they'd hit play there, and they'd hit record on the other VCR.
Carl, I don't understand you. With all you have...
I've worked hard for what I have.
And so now they've got 15 seconds of some clip from an old movie, and now they switch tapes to a sci-fi movie. And they hit play and record, and now they've got 10 seconds of a sci-fi movie.
They can probably live longer on less oxygen than we can anyway.
It doesn't look good. Sooner or later, we may have to leave.
And in the end, you've got this jumbled mix of, you know, an anime, and then an old movie, and then a sci-fi.
I've worked hard for what I have.
It doesn't look good.
And then you can put music over that, and suddenly you've got, like, a weird sort of, like, mix, a VJ mix to your favorite song, or whatever. That's what friends of mine used to do in, like, film school and stuff. It's not really that complex. I think that because we see these cool whiz-bang interfaces that Apple comes up with, like, especially iMovie, that seems to be the big thing that everyone sort of compares their video editor to for some unknown reason, because that's, like, the worst of the worst. But you see that stuff and you think, oh, wow, video editing is so complex. It's just such a monumental task. And yet, all it is hitting play and essentially record. One of the primary reasons that I changed OS's from Mac OS to Linux, and I mean there are lots of reasons, but this was a big one, was that I realized that on Linux, video codecs, there weren't any limitations. There weren't any arbitrary limitations, meaning that if I got some weird codec from a client to edit together or to combine with some other codec, some video in another codec, that I could do that on Linux. You can have anything you want on Linux. Whereas on Apple, I mean, at a certain point, if they don't like a video codec, then you're just not going to be able to do it without transcoding and decreasing quality, and then the client gets angry at you because the quality's gotten worse and they don't understand why that's not working, and then they'll take it to someone with a Windows box and then suddenly it works over there, and they wonder why you can't produce the same results, and frankly so do I. I mean, I used to wonder the same thing. Apple's supposed to be this big media crunching powerhouse, and yet unless you're using like the three or four codecs that they say it's okay to use, then you don't get to play. So really stupid and very aggravating. So Linux was a big pull toward Linux for me. This leads me to one of the best media players I know of, which is MPlayer. And you might be thinking, oh, I see where he's going with this. He's going to Mincoder. No, I'm actually not. MPlayer is actually all one really needs to edit video on Linux. I know, it sounds crazy. But wait, let me explain. So the workflow that I figured out, and this is basically proof of concept at this point, and I do have a proof of concept. It's just it's not super friendly. But so the workflow for video editing, essentially, regardless of how you're doing it, whether you're doing it with two VCRs hooked up into each other that you're going to press play and record on, whether you're doing it with film, you know, actual celluloid negatives. Well, you wouldn't be cutting the negatives, but you know what I mean. Work prints, or video on in a what they call a nonlinear editor. It's all the same. First, you preview the raw footage or the source footage. That's obvious, right? You've shot some footage. You need to look at it and see what you've got. So you preview that. Second, you select the good takes. Again, fairly obvious, right? I mean, in a movie, you've heard them say, you know, take one, take two, cut, take three, whatever. So you need to look at all the different times you had your actors do whatever you want them to do and see when they got it right or when they got it the best versus when they didn't get it right. Or maybe they got it right, but they didn't quite get it as well as you would have wanted them to do it. So you need to select the best takes. Now you take all those best takes and you put them into a bin. And that's quite literal, like in the film business, like, well, even today, but especially like, you know, 50 years ago, they'd have these long strips of film, right? And they'd say, well, this is the best take of this scene. Well, you don't want to just hang it from a clothespin on a line and have it dragging on the floor, right? So you hang it from a clothespin on a line that is hanging into a bin. And so you've got all your scenes kind of strung up and the tails just kind of hang down into this bin, into this, not a mess, but it gets a little bit messy down there, but it keeps it off the floor. So it's a bin. And that's why we call where you put your raw clips into a bin. So you put all your good takes into a bin and you preserve the other stuff, like the source footage. You want to preserve that. You don't want to just throw out that take that you didn't think was as good, because maybe you'll change your mind later, or maybe you'll need part of that scene, even though the rest of it's bad. Maybe there's like one shot. So you hang on to your source footage. This is, of course, what we call in nonlinear editing, non-destructive editing. The fifth step would be that you arrange the best takes of the film that you've selected in the order that the screenplay says they should be in. If you think about it, that makes sense, right? You've got all these different clips of footage. On Monday, you shot the big action sequence. On Tuesday, the romance sequence. On Wednesday, the dramatic part of the film. So, and your script actually calls for drama, romance, action, but you shot it action, romance, drama. So you need to put them in the proper order. So you do that, and that's actually called a rough assembly. And rough assemblies can be very, very long, because it's typically just literally the best take strung together, you know, the best takes strung together in the right order. Not really a whole lot of cutting going on. It's just take three of the drama, take two of the romance, and maybe take one of the romance just because we liked both, we can't decide yet, and then take one of the action sequence. Now you've got sort of your movie in the right order. So if you play that back, step six would be, you know, you play your rough assembly. You play that back for yourself, and yes, look at that. You've got your story. It goes in the proper order of the screenplay, and it tells the story. It's sloppy and overly verbose, but it tells the story. Okay, so now step seven would be sort of an if statement, I guess, or a while or something. You know, you go in and you adjust the clips. You say, well, the drama is a little bit long. We need to cut that a little bit shorter. So you cut that down, and you look at the romance scene. That's a little bit long, too, and the first part of take two was really, really good, but it kind of falls apart after that. But that last part on take one was really good, so let's just splice those together. So now you've just got one romance scene, like the script said, and it's the best parts of both take one and two. And then the action sequence, oh man, this, you know, we got everything, it's really good, but we need to really just tighten it up and make it faster and more action-y. And then you put the, well, yeah, so that would be what you would do. And then step eight would be to play that again and see, oh, look at that, that's feeling better. And then you go back to seven and you edit again. You say, well, we cut that scene a little bit short, let's lengthen it just a little bit. And then here's the romance, yeah, let's tighten that up still, and let's make this last part a little bit longer. And the action sequence, we need to pull in another angle so that we can get, you know, because it doesn't quite look like that car is, person's not quite as close to the car as it should look, so we need to kind of cut to a different angle to hide that fact, and so on and so on. And so you keep going back and forth on seven and eight until your edit is perfect. And then you end up with a, technically speaking, an editor's cut, if you're the editor. And that's it. That's how this stuff works. So as you can tell, all of this stuff is basically just playing clips back, just a lot. You're just playing clips over and over again. And again, what did I say Linux has going for it? Yes, MPlayer. It's got MPlayer, and MPlayer will play pretty much anything you throw at it, as we all know. So this is very exciting stuff, and I sat down and decided, okay, well, according to that workflow, we really only need a few things. We need a clip maker module, we need a clip definer module, and then we need a clip sequencer and a clip player. That's all video editing really, really wants. So I sat down and wrote some pseudocode for these different modules. So I've got a clip maker module where, okay, you get the movie file, the source footage, you set an endpoint and an outpoint on the part that you like. That is now a clip. Now we need to save that clip. We need to save that take. So if you've got a big source file and you've got take one, take 2 and take 3, and really all you want is take 2. You would set your end point at the beginning of take 2 and your out point at the end of take 2. And then we would want to save that end out as a virtual clip. Right? We don't actually want to cut it out of the source footage. There's no reason to do that. We simply need to take the numbers associated, like this time signature associated with the in and the out point of that clip, and we need to save it somewhere. So the setting of the in and the out point, I'm calling a clip maker module. And then the saving of that as a virtual clip, I'm calling a clip definer. And I eventually came up with some bash code to do that very thing. I'll get into that in a moment. So we've got clips being made, or, you know, in and out points being defined, and then the clips being saved as little virtual clips in some temporary file or whatever. That would be the first, what, 3 or 4 steps of the workflow, where you're looking at your source footage, you're setting your in and out points, you're selecting your best takes, and you're putting the takes into a bin. That's done. Now what we need to do is do what? Yes, we need to make a rough assembly. To do that, all we need is a clip sequencer module, meaning that you have some way to look at all the clips that you've defined, all these little virtual clips lying around in your virtual bin, and you say, well, I want clip A to go here, clip B to go there, clip E to go here, and then back to clip C. Now you've got a movie, right? That's the order that the screenplay calls for. So now you've got a rough assembly of all your clips. Now, ideally, as a part of the clip sequencer, you'd be able to also, for instance, well, maybe you don't want clip B after all. So you should have a way to remove that clip from the sequence, to delete the virtual clip from the sequence, not from your bin, but from the sequence. You would also want, I would hope, some kind of way to move a clip around within a sequence. So instead of starting with A, going to B, and then to E, and then to C, maybe we want to do something wild and crazy and start with the end. So we'll take clip C and move it to the very beginning of the sequence. So then we have C, A, B, E. Getting better. We're making movies here. This is editor stuff. And then finally, what you would want to also be able to do for that 7th and 8th step, you know, that little loop there at the end where you're kind of refining your edit, you'd want some way to say, well, I love this sequence. I love C to A, B, E, but A and B seem really long right now, so I want to shorten them. I want to change the out point to A and B. So you would go in and be able to say, instead of ending here, I want to end, you know, a second earlier, or 6 frames earlier. Believe it or not, sometimes it boils down to literally just being, for instance, 6 frames. So you would want some kind of dynamic way of changing those in and out points. You would also want to be able to expand them. So maybe A was, we judged A a little bit short, so now we actually, instead of shortening it by a second or 6 frames, we want to lengthen it by 5 seconds. And so we would want to have some way of extending that edit. You keep doing that over and over again, and finally you end up with a sequence that is your movie in the proper order, or the order that you've chosen to be the proper order, with all the cuts that you want, and suddenly you hit play, and it plays them all back in sequence, and you've got a movie. You've got a movie that's edited together in the proper order, exactly how you envisioned it. Well, probably not exactly how you envisioned it. That's not the way movies are made, but close enough to what you envisioned that you'll live with it. Or you're just so tired of editing it that you just figure, well, it's time to say that this is good enough. The final step, the 9th step and the 10th step that I didn't really go over in the workflow would be taking this sequence and exporting it as a self-contained movie, right? Saying, okay, here's my movie in total. Here it is with all the cuts, but it doesn't look like it's cut anymore. It's completely together. It's one file. I could send it. I could archive it on a hard drive, for instance, because it's going to be a big file. You wouldn't want this to be a compressed version of your movie. You would want this to be the big version of your movie, huge, big movie, not something that you could burn to a DVD yet. So that would be step 9, is exporting it as your gold master, essentially. And then step 10 would be taking that gold master and running it through Mincoder or FFmpeg or whatever, and then you'd end up with a compressed version of your movie that you could post on the internet or burn to DVD if you're into the whole physical media stuff, or stream it, or, you know, however you're going to deliver it to whoever your audience is. Now, excluded from there, and this is a little bit unfair, but again, it's a little bit outside of the scope of this conversation, is like sound edits and and color correction and stuff like that. But I'd be okay with tackling those problems certainly as a separate issue. And technically speaking, very technically, and not, it's not elegant, but technically you can do those things independent of this process. So in terms of, I mean, that's how it was traditionally done, so it's just most people are going to assume that they can do those things within their video editor at this point because that's kind of become the norm. But I think we could squeeze by with a video editor that just edited video initially, and reliably. So my issues with video editors that do sort of work right now is that they always seem to want to transcode stuff or make copies of the media, and every edit that you make creates a new copy of that little segment. It's horrible. It's really badly done. There's no excuse for going into a video editor and saying, okay, I have this 40 gig movie file that I want to cut up into pieces, and you have to sit around and wait for 30 minutes while this video editor manages to quote-unquote import all of that video footage. I mean, where is it importing it? I don't even understand. So playing and recording what's happening with the timestamps is all you really need, and that's the beauty of my little proof of concept application. So let us look at this, and if you want to look at this dynamically along with me, I do have this all in a Git repository. And that repository is at git://gitorius.org/auteur/auteur.git. So again, that's git://gitorius.org/auteur, A-U-T-E-U-R, it's the French word for author, /auteur.git. If you clone that, if you do a git clone that address, it will clone the repository. It should be really quick because they're just a bunch of text files, so shouldn't really take too long to grab that. Then you can, there's a README file there that explains a little bit of what I've just explained. There's the pseudocode, and there's the bash sequences, the bash scripts that I've written toward actually doing an actual proof of concept of this. And it's really lo-fi. It's nothing very special at all. Hopefully it's the beginning of something better. It'll probably be a long-term project for me because I still have to learn how to, like, really code and stuff, but and I have no idea how realistic any of this stuff is, but I think the strength is that it's using MPlayer as the back end, and it's using numbers as its currency. So the first thing that you do when you open up the Git repository, you should look at, well, read the README first, I guess, but then you can look at the clipmaker.sh, and that's the one, that's the first module, and actually the second module combined, because making the clip and then saving them out as virtual clips is essentially, as I started to do it as a bash script, I realized they're really the same thing. So you would, I mean, you can try this too. I mean, you can run it. It will actually work. It actually does work. It's just not elegant at all. So you do, what I did rather, was I asked the user for the source file to define what the source footage is. So you simply type in the full path of the source footage. And then it's going to start playing it. Now, during playback, since we're just in MPlayer, you can hit the letter I to mark an endpoint. And then once that's set, you hit I again, and that sets the outpoint. So this is a built-in function of MPlayer, and they call it an EDL, Edit Decision List. The problem is that their Edit Decision List is programmed, is hard-coded, to be the thing that MPlayer does not play. And what we're trying to do is define the thing that MPlayer does play. It doesn't take a rocket scientist, obviously, since I figured it out. It doesn't take a rocket science to figure out that if you have a time of the place that you want to start skipping and then a time to stop skipping, you can just convert that into some other numbers to mean I want you to start playing here and stop playing there. Simple enough, right? So what I did there was I established a variable called clip ID, and I said that we would equal that to just the date and cut it at the fourth field delimited by spaces, and use sed to change the colon to a dash. So basically I'm establishing a unique ID for a clip. And I showed this code to Gort, and he suggested that I might want to establish something even more random, because I was thinking, oh, this will be totally random. It's a date with a timestamp. How could it possibly, you know, you're not going to create two clips at the same time, at the same day. But I don't know if I have enough there. So I'll either pull from like /dev/random or something, or uRandom if it's on BSD or at least OS 10, and try to get something more random than just the date and timestamp. I'm not sure yet. But anyway, the point is that we're establishing a unique clip ID. So all we're doing there is establishing a unique identifier for the clip, and that's called clip ID. So then we start the source footage playing back at with mplayer space -edlout space /temp/whatever the name of the source clip is .clipid.cdl, and then we give it the source variable. So that just starts the clip playing for the user in a screen, and it's going to be sending out the key presses, the I and the I, where we're marking the time code. That's going to be, well, it's not time code, the time stamp. We're going to be sending that out to a file in a little temp file, a temp folder, called it a .cdl, clip decision list, that's what I'm calling it. And so that's where our number is going to end up. Okay, so now the user has hit I and I, so they've defined their clip. So now they can name the clip, so we get that from them. And now we need to convert those numbers. The conversion of those numbers isn't terribly hard. We first need to extract them from the EDL. So to get that, we'll establish a variable called iPoint for inpoint, iPoint equals the results of cat, that little CDL, the edit decision list that we created for ourselves, and we pipe that to cut, and we cut just out field 1 with a space delimiter. So all we want is the first number, and we get that, and we assign that to iPoint. And then we do the same thing for oPoint. Now we have I point and O point. And according to mPlayer, of course, these are the places that it wants to skip. So what we're going to do is convert the out point to a duration, because mPlayer doesn't accept the time for the out point the same value as the endpoint. So when you say, for instance, mPlayer -ss I point -end POS O point, that will tell mPlayer to start at the endpoint and then play for however many seconds that out point was recorded at. That's not what we want. We actually want it to play from the endpoint for X number of seconds until it reaches the equivalent of that out point. So let me just, I'm probably not explaining that very correctly because I have it in my own head. So let's say that we start a clip playing at the 10-second mark and we let it play until the 15-second mark. So our I point would be 10 seconds, right? Our O point would be 15 seconds. The problem is that when you play it back with mPlayer, we really want to tell it mPlayer start at 10 seconds, that's correct, and play it for a duration of 5 seconds. You see what I did there? So 10 seconds to 15 seconds is a duration of 5 seconds. So we need to figure out the duration. We cannot feed mPlayer 10 and 15, because if we do that, it will play from the 10 second point for 15 seconds, which would end us up at, what, 25 second point? That's not what we want. We want to end up at 15 seconds, i.e., play for a duration of 5. That's obviously really easy to get. You simply assign a variable called dur, D-U-R, equals the results of echo, $ O point minus $ I point, and then pipe that through BC. BC is like some kind of calculator that Bash does. I don't know a whole lot about it. I think K5 Tux is going to be doing an episode on it soon for his QSK cast, so that will be really neat to learn more about it. I'm just using it here to basically say, hey, take whatever is being stored in the out point and subtract it from the in point. And of course, the result is going to be the duration, because basically what we're saying is 15 minus 10 equals 5. Okay? Simple little conversion. So now we need to store these values as a virtual clip. So all we'll do there is do an echo quote -ss space the variable I point space -end POS, that's end position, which is a very deceptive term. It should be something like -duration. But anyway, -end POS space the value of dur, D-U-R, space $ source, end quote. Very important here. So redirect that to some little folder called clips and assign it the clip name, which is the user clip name that they invented for us. I might need to assign some kind of unique identifier to that. I'm not sure yet. But anyway, the clip name will be, well, that's a virtual clip. And all it contains, it's just a text file, and it contains the numbers that we need. We need the start point and the duration of the clip. But where is this clip coming from? Well, it's always coming from the source, right? It should be non-destructive editing. There's no reason for Mincoder to step in and say, oh, let's extract that segment of footage and export it as its own new clip. That's ridiculous. It takes processing time. It takes processing power. It risks losing sync with audio and video, and it takes disk space. You tell me that you're going to edit a 90-minute movie together and have Mincoder grabbing clips from source footage every time you define a clip. It's absurd, and yet that is how some other applications seem to be doing it right now. So we're simply using time markers, I keep wanting to say time code, but sadly we're not using SMPTE time code. We're using seconds here, which is a really bad way to do it, by the way, but whatever. So seconds and milliseconds we're using to define exactly where InPlayer should start and stop playing. And that's all you need for this kind of process. And everything's always coming from the source footage, meaning that if we want to expand these numbers or shorten them, it's just a matter of changing some numbers. Very, very effective, my friends. And then, of course, we would want to do that over and over again, right? You would just keep running that module over and over again until you've defined all the clips out of your source footage that you feel like doing at that point. Now, depending on the user, they might go through all of their source footage and define a whole bunch of clips, or they might want to just do one scene, and they're just pulling out takes from their source footage that all go together in this one group, in this one scene, and edit that scene together, and then stash that, and then go do another scene. It just depends on the editor, really. Traditionally, it would be the whole, you know, all the good clips, all the good takes, and then they would string it together as a rough assembly, but it's not necessarily having to be done that way. This is a module, we can run it anytime. Okay, so now if we look at an overview of what we've got clips in a folder called, we've got virtual clips in a clip directory. We've got all those original EDLs in our little temp directory, which maybe I should rename to like EDLs or something like that. I don't know. No, because EDL to an editor means something else, so I'll probably keep it as temp, because it's really more of a reference. For all I know, they could be zapped at some point. And then we got our source footage in our, you know, wherever the user has stored the source footage. So at this point, all we need to do is string them together. And again, that's just a question of stringing time code together, or time values together. And that would be done in our little, what I'm calling our clip sequencer module. Now, the clip sequencer module is really even simpler than the clip maker module. And all you do is you define a sequence name. So this might be, you know, scene 1A or scene 2 or scene 5 or the first half of the movie, you know, whatever. You type in some unique name for this sequence. And then you echo the virtual clips into the sequence name. So literally just do an echo of the result of cat on some clip name into the sequence. Now, the way that you'd have to do it is add a backslash at the end of each line, and that way when you do InPlayer this sequence, then it's essentially reading a whole bunch of -ss, let's say 10-endpos, 5, whatever, and then it's playing, it'll continue to step through that list of virtual clips that you want it to play. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if you looked at this thing, you would see a whole bunch, if you looked at your sequence, all it would be are a whole bunch of commands, or a whole bunch of part of commands, that would say -ss, 10-endpos, 5, source name, and then backslash. Next line would be -ss, 20-endpos, 10, space, source, backslash again, -ss, 3, -endpos, 8, space, source, footage, clip 2. You know, so it would be whatever source footage you've got, whether you have 5 DV tapes that you've imported, or 1, or 11, or 50, you simply are going to be listing literally the times in and out that you want it to play for each clip. And you can keep going back. You can reuse footage. You can go back and use, you know, you can go from one source to another source. It just doesn't matter. InPlayer can do that. That's what it does best. And now you've got it all sequenced together. Now the trick is to get all that stuff to play in one window. And the way that you do this, again, it actually, InPlayer kind of has this coded into it, so again, you're seeing how little I've actually done here. But I did make a little player.sh. So there's a little shell script in there in the Git repository. You'll see it's called player.sh, and this would be the thing that you would use to play either your virtual clips or I think your sequencer. You have to use this for sequencer too, I think. And then you can what you would do is you would do an exec implayer dash, I established a cache, but that's not a big deal, but then dash fixed dash vo, meaning that the window of implayer will stay open. It won't like play a clip and then close the window and then reopen a new in-player window and play another clip and then close that window and then open a new window and play another clip. It just keeps that window open for as many clips as you want to play. So no kidding, in-player is practically a ready-made video editor. I mean, it literally is that robust. It's great. There are a few points that are kind of difficult for it right now, like smoothly playing back all these clips without any interruption seems to be a problem, so there's like a flash of black between a lot of the clips, but I think that's just for the playback, and even if it's not, I think probably we could work around that. There's got to be a way to get around that, so I'm not too concerned about that. The real thing that I'm trying to, I guess, prove with this proof of concept is that video editing already exists. We're just not stringing it together correctly. We're using the wrong stuff. I'm not convinced that GStreamer is the best thing to be using. I'm not convinced that it's not, because I'm not a programmer. I don't know that kind of stuff, but I do know that in terms of what I can get done reliably and quickly on GNU Linux as a video editor, it generally speaking centers around MinPlayer and MinCoder and FFmpeg. And those are really good technologies, and I think we need to start leveraging them. So, if you're either curious about bash scripting, or EDLs, or MinPlayer, or video editing, or programming, perhaps you're a programmer looking for a project to contribute to, I now have a project you can contribute to. What this needs is polish and a GUI. I do know that, like, for instance, I was looking at Ruby for a little while, and Ruby has this little call where you type in ruby-e, quote, system, blah, double quote, blah, close, double quote, close, single quote, and Ruby essentially just, it executes whatever's in there, you know, system and then double quote, whatever's in those double quotes, it executes as a shell command. So there is that, but then the more I looked into it, the more I realized that, well, Ruby doesn't exactly have a GUI programming environment, really, except Qt, but I know nothing about programming in Qt. So yeah, lots of levels of complete ignorance on my part. What I do have knowledge about, I guess, breaks down to, well, I know how video editors are supposed to work, and I know how old-school video editing, which used to be by frame numbers and edge numbers, but, I mean, that's how they used to do it. Before computers were around, people couldn't do it that way. They had to just count. Okay, let's go to the negatives, and we'll copy, you know, 60 frames. We'll count 60 frames in, and then we'll copy 60 frames, and then we'll count another 5 frames, and we'll get another 10 frames. Well, not 10 frames. 120 frames, you know, and that's how it used to be done. It was all, it's done by numbers. That's all it takes. There's time, there's duration, there's frame numbers, all these kinds of little clues that we can use to extract the footage that we want. And essentially all that is playing it back and then making a copy at some later date of the good parts. So it exists. It can be done. This is a proof of concept. Feel free to look at my Git repository. Again, that is git://gitorius.org/autour/autour.git. Clone it, look at it, laugh at my code. I hesitate to even call it code, but look at it. And if you know anything about GUI programming, let me know, and we'll see what we can do. And yeah, this is probably all very premature, and it's going to end up with a very, very basic video editor that no one would ever want to use. But I think it's a good proof of concept, and that's why I did it.